missed that one, sorry.
Anybody remember what we talked about last week?
I learned that God made the first aquarium and the first takeout service. Yes.
Yeah, first takeout service.
Takeout, yeah. Or no, bring home.
Home delivery service.
Home delivery service, that's right.
Because he provided the quail and the manna for 40 years, morning and evening. Quail in the evening, manna in the morning.
Right.
God provided for all the children for 40 years consistent. We figure that's 14,600 days.
Right.
Is what he provided. And we figured, it's approximately estimated about 2.5 million people is what they're saying were about that time, the Israelites were. So we've got to figure, if you have one quail for every person, 2.5 million times 14,600
every evening.
Every evening. If they had one quail, that's a lot of quail that the Lord provided. But, I mean, I don't know if that's accurate. But.
Right. And when he split the Red Sea.
Yeah, he split the Red Sea, wiped out all the Egyptians, and then we discussed where Moses struck the rock and water gushed forth, and it wasn't just a little trickle of water. You had to have a river. It said, the Bible says a river, because, you know, to provide water for all the livestock, and it's a lot of water. So pretty cool stuff. Well, tonight we're going to talk about God, and he's making an agreement with the children of Israel, and his agreement is he's going to bless them if they obey him. If they obey him. I mean, have you ever done that with your kids? Kids, if you do this,
more often than not, yes.
Then we will do this as parents, right? If you get your room cleaned up tonight, you can watch a movie, or, you know, if you get your room cleaned up, we'll go to the beach this weekend. Or, you know, if you do certain things, you get good grades in school, I'll buy you a car. Some people, you know.
I wish that was
the case with me.
Six flags for the weekend. Yeah.
So, I mean, those type of things. So, you think that's what God was doing with the children of Israel? If you be obedient like this, you will be blessed by I'll give you something. Or what do you think God was really saying? We're going to learn about it tonight, but what do you think about that? So, I mean, does that stay in line with God's character, as we've learned about his character? That his character is that he will only bless us if we obey him. He will only good things happen to us if we obey him. And the children of Israel, if they would just do what is right and only do what is right, then God's going to bless them.
Right. God keeps his word.
Yeah, God keeps his word. We know that. So if God says something, he is definitely going to, right. He's definitely going to bless them, because he says it if they honor that, right? Because he does, and God always keeps his word. Mm-hmm. Everything he says comes to pass. Everything he does always takes place. When we talk about this, I want you to begin thinking about God's character. We want to think about God's mercy and grace. How does that tie into it? We'll have several slides here towards the end that we're going to be discussing. And then next week we'll be getting into the commandments that he issues. So, all right, we're going to start off. We're going to jump all the way to Exodus 19, and we're going to read verses 1 and 2. And this is where he directs them to Mount Sinai. And remember, we had the picture on the map on Mount Sinai, where there could be two possibilities where Mount Sinai came about. So. Mm-hmm. Let's see what it says. Exactly 2 months after the Israelites left Egypt, they arrived in the wilderness of Sinai, and after breaking camp at Rephidim, they came to the wilderness of Sinai and set up camp at the base of Mount Sinai. All right, so you have God, and when God leads them somewhere, what was he leading them with?
The pillar of cloud.
Pillar, right. Remember, they had the cloud in front, and then at night, they would, if they were traveling, when the Egyptians were following them, you had the fire behind them, right? The big tall pillar of fire behind them at night. And God would continue to use that all the way up until they reached the promised land, okay? So we have them there. in Mount Sinai is also, if you have your map, I don't know if you have your map with your book, but if you have your map with your book, it's also known as Mount Horeb. So whenever you see in the Bible Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai, that they're referring to the same location, same place. And what took place back with Moses on this mountain?
Burning bush.
The burning bush, right. God spoke to Moses on this mountain in the burning bush. So we have that take place. And that's back, you'll find that back in Exodus 3:12. Matter of fact, there's the mountain. There's a map there on the screen up there. And you can kind of see the probable location is over here. It could be right here. We determined that because this is where the Egyptians or the Israelites traveled when they left Egypt, they went down this direction instead of straight across from Egypt into over here, which, you remember, God made them wander around in the wilderness for 40 years out in here. He wanted them to do that. Wanted them to trust him. They wanted him to follow him and not their own thinking. So we know that God said, and God told Moses that I'm going to lead your people back here, right? I'm going to bring them back when he was at the burning bush. So he comes back, and all the things that God was found trustworthy with, it, that he led them back through, provide them all the food, all the way through. We have all those illustrations, right? All those pieces of history. Now we get to verse 3 through 6, and this is where God starts to tell them. He says this, "Then Moses climbed the mountain to appear before God. The Lord called to him from the mountain and said, 'Give these instructions to the family of Jacob.'" Remember, the family of Jacob is the 12 tribes. So the 12 tribes are made up of all the 12 sons. Joseph, Benjamin, Reuben. Those are the names of all the tribes of Israel. And he said, "You have seen what I did to the Egyptians. You know how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now if you will obey me and keep my covenant, you will be my own special treasure, or special people, from among all the peoples of the earth. For all the earth belongs to me. And you will be my kingdom of priests, my holy nation. This is the message you must give to the people of Israel." Now I want you to, if you underline your Bibles, I would underline that section right there where he's talking about, "You will be my kingdom priest, you will be my priest, or my holy nation." And the reason I say that is because when we get all the way, flip all the way to when the deliverer comes, God then gives that description about you and I. And you can find that in 1 Peter. And that same description changes to you and I later on as we get to, when we get into those verses there. So when you're thinking of Moses and he's on the mountaintop, what do you think might have been going through Moses' mind? This is the second time he's met with God on this mountain. Huh?
What next?
What next? Yeah. Well, you got the Israelites. He's got 2.5 million people on the bottom of the mountain, or more.
Right.
And he's on top of this mountain with God. Now we know that when God was spoken in the burning bush, the bush didn't burn, right?
Right.
We know that God's presence. When God's presence comes down, we'll get to that here in a little bit, because God sets up a boundary on the mountain. Well, let's continue on. Let's read. Let's keep right on and see what the Israelites do. You think they have promised to obey God? All right, someone read verses 7 through 8.
"And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and set before them all these words which Jehovah commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, 'All that Jehovah has spoken, we will do.' And Moses reported the words of the people unto Jehovah."
Hmm. So they said what? They quickly agreed, didn't they?
Right.
Now, have you,
he came back down.
Mm-hmm. He came back down.
And he went back.
Yeah, he came back down and he talks to the people and he tells them what God told them, right? "If you keep my commandments and my covenant with me, then I'm going to bless you." Right? So Moses comes back down and tells all, gathers all the elders of the people, which means that, you know, the leaders of those tribes, and they say, "Yo, we're gonna do this." And they all agree. We're gonna keep God's word, God's covenant. Now you got 2.5 million people here, and I don't know how many elders were present, but let's say if you had one elder for every tribe,
but
that's
12. 40 years later though. it was $2.5 million at the onset.
Correct, yes. It could be more than that.
At the onset,
yes, it could be
now
more than $2.5 million.
Down the road.
Yeah. You
so
could
you
have
don't know.
You could have $3 million, you know, you don't know. I mean, yeah.
Right.
And you have some that die off in between there, but you have all that. So you have this thing, and the elders speak for the people, right? It's kind of like your leader at work or something like that. They, your supervisor speaks for the team a lot of times. And so here are the elders, and they agree. They just basically say, okay, we will do everything the Lord has commanded. That's what they said. Do you think that was a very wise answer?
I think they were,
I think at the time they were making a very,
honest.
Hey, well, God says this, sure, we'll do it. But if they were to process that, I mean, you have to look back at 40 years of grumbling and complaining. Every time they thought they were going to run out of water, they grumbled and complained about Moses. If they were to thought about how they wanted to turn back to Egypt because they didn't have any food and they didn't trust God, here they are just quickly willing to obey God, okay? How would you have thought if their reply was like this? We are miserable failures at obeying you. If you're going to accept us on the basis of how we obey you, we are in trouble. Don't you think that would have been a better way of saying it, a more honest way of saying that? I mean, because of based on what they had. I mean, they had forgotten all the way through for 40 years how God had done wonderful things for them. However, the Israelites would have probably been described as a self-confident people now. We've got this, you know. So what did they fail to realize, though, in that promise or covenant with God?
He's over everything.
He's over everything. Looking for what did they fail? Something that something that you and I are born with. What did they fail to remember or realize?
We're imperfect.
We're imperfect. That they can't be perfect. They cannot obey God 100% all the time. There's just no way they can. And they should have realized that. In their own efforts, they can't please God. We can't. And it's the same thing. Same thing today. This agreement, we have to understand, this agreement is not like... there is no way for them to declare bankruptcy on this agreement. Now, you know what I mean by that is you borrow money, and if you can't pay it back, and you struggle along, you can't pay it back, we'll declare bankruptcy. And you have different levels of bankruptcy, and we're not going to get into all that. But there was no way for the Israelites to declare bankruptcy on this agreement that they were agreeing to. This agreement had to remain perfect in order for them to receive the blessings. So, if they were wise and were thinking about that, there's just no way we can accomplish that. It would leave them hopeless. But they didn't think about that. They just agreed easily and said, hey, we're going to move on. Let's skip down to verses 9 through 11. Let's see what happens.
And the Lord said to Moses, behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. So Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. Then the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people.
Okay, so he's describing how he's going to come down. The Lord's going to plan this great... I really would wonder how we would respond today if God were to come down like this. So let's use Sunday morning. The church is gathered. All the people are gathered. And God tells Willis, I think Willis is preaching Sunday. I'm not sure. Neither Willis or Lynn. One of them, he tells him, I'm coming down, and this is how I'm going to come down. I'm going to come down with this great big cloud, and I'm going to speak with you. God had set this all up to declare to them his power, his glory, and his presence with them. So he's going to come down. And it didn't stop there. Let's read 12 and 13.
You shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, Take heed to yourselves that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. Not a hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot with an arrow. Whether man or beast, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds long, they shall come near the mountain.
Okay, so now you have God who wants to bless the people of the children of Israel, and you have a God now who's telling them, set a boundary. So you have the mountain, and now you can't come across this. Cannot come across this mountain. Don't come across this line. It's almost as if he draws a line in the sand and says, do not cross here. And if you do, what's going to happen?
You're surely
die. You're going to surely die. What does that remind us of?
But you can burn the face of God.
Huh? The burning bush. I'm looking for something else.
You can't look upon the face of God.
Yeah. Can't see the face of God. And Adam and Eve, the Garden of Eden, where he said, if you eat of this, in other words, this is the line. You cross this line, you're going to die.
So who's saying this? Is this God saying this, or is this Moses telling
this? This is God telling Moses to set up a boundary to the people. So can you imagine? This was not a negative thing or a bad thing for the children of Israel. This was God protecting them. Again, we see the character of God setting up. God knows that as imperfect human beings, we can't enter into his presence.
Right.
We can't be close to him because God's perfect. And God cannot be around evil.
Right.
Okay? And so he's holy. His whole thing. And so God in his character recognized that we as human beings, if we were to see the presence of God like this, we would want to rush toward it. Think about that in a little bit and how that applies to us today in church and everyday life. We want to long to come to God, right? There's a longing inside each person. Whether they choose to go and come towards God, there's a longing instilled inside of us. And so he set up this boundary so that nothing that was imperfect or blemished could come to him because they would die. God was protecting the children of Israel here. Now, it's a question about that, when how come Moses could go into his presence? And I knew that one probably would come up, so I'll let you think about that one thing. How in the world could Moses go into his presence then and be right on the mountain with him if he was imperfect too, right? Moses was an imperfect man. He killed somebody. We know that, right? In Egypt? So maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit, but let's come back. God had specific instructions again. And what does that tell you about God? That he is a God of
mercy.
Mercy. He's a God of order. He does everything the way he wants to do it in his time, right? He sets it up. Just like he gave the instructions for Noah, build the ark of this size, all the way through. God had this instructions for the children of Israel. All right, 16 through 19. Let's see what happens.
And it came to pass on the third day, when it was morning, that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of a trumpet exceeded loud, and all the people that were in camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet God, and they stood at the neither part of the mount. And Mount Sinai, the whole of it, smoked, because Jehovah descended upon it in fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. Was it till 19?
Mm-hmm.
That's 19.
Yeah. So the whole mountain. Did you read verse 19 too?
Oh, no.
Yeah, read verse 19.
And when the voice of the trumpet waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice.
Yes. So we have this picture of what takes place. You have that in the third day after all this is done, you have this thunder and lightning, and we hear some pretty loud thunder and lightnings around here. I mean, you get these storms. We're going to have a storm this weekend possibly, and there might be some thunder and lightning in that storm, but you have this picture of the thunder and lightning coming down, a dense cloud coming and hovering over. So I kind of picture, you know, the mountain peaks of Pikes Peak out in Washington State or Mount St. Helens, and you got these big, tall mountains, and here's the cloud covers the entire top, and it's coming down over it. And it comes there because God comes down on top of this mountain. And there's fire and thunder and lightning and just that. I mean, what a terrible thing to be experiencing that when you wake up on the morning of the third day. You wake up and all this stuff starts to take place. I don't know about you, but I might be. I don't know if I would be either excited in anticipation of what's going on, or if I'm going to be afraid of it. I don't know. But we know that they had the thing, and so they have the boundary, and they're all sitting there, and God, Moses begins to speak to God, and then God thunders his reply. Okay? And you go on all the way through that. Can you think of other instances where, that we've already studied in the past, where God would, through this demonstration of his holiness, where he would not tolerate sin? So if you came across it across the line, we talked about Adam and Eve and that, we've said the flood, but where else where we have seen fire and thunder and brimstone and smoke?
Sodom and Gomorrah,
right? And he called down fire, brought down fire, the angels did. We had that in one of the plagues. There was a hail and the fire went across the ground and where he killed all the firstborn for them disobeying him. And so God then calls Moses up to the mountain. Verse 20, he says, Moses... The Lord came down on top of the Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top of the mountain. So Moses climbs the mountain. Now, why did God tell Moses to go up on top of the mountain?
Well, he wasn't going to go down to him.
He wasn't going to go down to him, right? Okay.
He's been up and down that mountain a few times.
He's been up and down, yeah. He's,
you know what I mean? He's got to be put in shape.
And Moses would have been over 80 years old when he did this.
Maybe it was a test.
It was a test for Moses to listen to go up, okay.
Because it was like out of sight, like only Moses could see him.
Only Moses could be in his presence, right, at that time, yeah. And only Moses could see, yeah, okay. Well, what do you think about this what would it indicate if the Israelites refused to listen to Moses and cross that boundary? If they saw Moses starting to head up that mountain, they said, well, if Moses can do that, we can too. They were going to die, right?
So, testing them.
Yeah, and the first five books of the Bible have been attributed to Moses being the author of them. Okay, so he's one of the writers that they've kind of come out of the writings that wrote Genesis, Exodus, and all that through. God revealed it to him. Of course, he was there with the Exodus part, but revealed to him at creation. That's what they believe. I don't know that I could say that 100% myself, but that's what theologians and historians have. Right. And God clearly laid out all this in a record for him. Okay?
What did the people did hear God speak to Moses then?
Now, that's a very good question. Would they have heard his voice?
Yeah, because, I mean, he went down and told the people that God was going to come and
Well, in some translations, it says that when God answered Moses, he answered him through the thundering. So I don't know if they would have actually heard God's voice.
Well, it's verse 9. It says, I will come to you in a thick cloud, Moses, so the people themselves can hear me when I speak with you.
Okay. Right. So he did hear them. Very good. Did we read that verse or did we skip over that one?
Yeah, we read that one.
Man. Long day.
I was just kind of reiterating it. You know,
yeah, so they would have heard God's voice.
Right.
Not even that alone would be a...
Right.
Has anybody ever heard God's voice?
No.
Mm-hmm.
It would be cool, too.
Oh.
Voices in your head.
Well, voices in your head, okay. Well, let's listen. Let's see what this says. 1 Peter 20 through 21. I'm just going to read it for you. God chose Moses. God chose him as your ransom. He's talking about the deliverer before the world began and is now revealed to him in your last days. Through Christ, you have come to trust in God. You have placed your faith and hope in God because he raised Christ from the dead and gave him great glory. Oh, what am I? I'm reading 1 Peter. I'm supposed to be reading 2 Peter. What are you supposed to be talking about? The deliverer.
Yeah, right.
What in the world? I looked at that wrong. Above all, you must realize that no prophecy in Scripture ever came from a prophet's own understanding or human initiative. No, those prophets were moved by the Holy Spirit as they spoke from God. Okay, so understand that everything in the Bible, the writers like Moses and the other authors of that, all comes from God. So Moses is getting a message from God here on the mountain. Okay, and so what it sounded like, I can't describe to you, other than sometimes there are verses in the Bible talk about God having a still small voice. We know God thundered through the thunderings of the thunder, a loud voice. Any other thoughts? Any other verses that come to your mind while thinking about when God speaks?
The earth shakes.
The earth shook. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So think about that. God uses the Word, the Bible, to speak to us too. So let's read 21 through 25, and let's see 19 verses 21 through 25, and let's see what goes on, what transpires between God and Moses.
And the Lord said to Moses, you said 21 to 25,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, through 25.
And the Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people, lest they break through the gates at the Lord, and many of them perish. Also, let the priests who come near the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. But Moses said to the Lord, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you warned us, saying, set bounds around the mountain and consecrate it. Then the Lord said to him, away, get down, and then come up, you and Aaron with you. But do not let the priest and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and spoke to them.
Why do you think God reiterates this again? He's already told them once. They set the boundary up. I mean, Moses gives the instructions. Moses goes up there on the mountain. And God feels like he needs to let Moses know again, will you please go back down the mountain and tell the people again, don't come across this boundary, because if you do, you will die.
He's trying to save them from...
Yeah, God really wants them to know how much what he says... Is the final line in the
so
sand.
He's scrambling back down the mountain again.
Exactly. How far up the mountain did Moses go? I don't know, but he's certainly going back and forth. Okay, and this is taking place, you know, during this time. I think people would be getting a little tired and waiting around, right?
Yeah, impatient.
Impatient, maybe. And that's why they might have pressed on into the mountain. And God really wanted that to... He hammers this home for the children of Israel. He really wants them to understand that when God says something, he means it. And I think if we really process that and said, okay, if God says this, then he means it. When we read through the Bible and we come to a verse where God says something, it should make us pause and think, if God says this, then I better take heed of it. Mm-hmm. Now you'll throw in the whole grace and mercy and all this other stuff into play in the New Testament then when we get to that. But God is really laying a foundation here for the children of Israel that, listen, you want my blessing? You do what I say. You cross the line, I'm not going to bless you anymore. I'm going to cut you off or you will die. And so we have this whole thing. So Moses comes down, honors God, is obedient to God, comes down, and he gets off of there. And I'll skip ahead here to the... I'm going a little too quick here. So here we are on the timeline now. So God is right here. We've got... We're into Exodus. We're now to 1,500 years B.C. And we're getting ready to have God's commandment given to the children of Israel. His covenant with them. This covenant that he's going to do. Or we would refer to this as the law. And you will still hear it today. Well, matter of fact, we had a sermon not too long ago about the law. About living under the law. David preached about grace and, you know, living under the law versus under grace in the New Testament.
Not to go back to what you're saying, but he's telling them twice now. So I'm kind of thinking of ahead a little bit. So if the people disobey, then that might mess up his timeline for the deliverer to come through certain channels if somebody were to perish or something like that.
Hasn't it messed up several times?
Yeah, there was. I was going to say, throughout history, we have this pattern where man does his own will. God knows he's going to do it, so he already knows what's going to happen.
That's true.
They mess up. So like Adam and Eve, perfect world that he was created, Adam and Eve said, we'll eat of the fruit. Well, that messed up exactly what God had intended, even though God knew they were going to do it, because before that, he had planned to have a deliverer come. He already knew that that was going to take place. And then you get to Noah, 120 years, his plan was for them to repent. And they didn't listen, so he had to bring the flood. And then he gets to Sodom and Gomorrah, kind of, you know, kind of is a pattern where mankind chooses to do what they want over and over again. And God is gracious and he's merciful. And we'll see that here with the children of Israel, because for 40 years they got fed them every morning and evening. And throughout the 40 years, they grumbled and complained over and over and over again.
It was the same diet every day.
Have you ever eaten bread and meat?
Yeah. I think at the 6-month mark, I'd be going, really?
Again, quail.
Right.
There's only so many ways you can cook quail, God. I mean, come on, Lord. I mean, we've had the speedies, they call them, you know, where you just cut them in little chunks and fry them over the fire, and then you probably fried them with flour, maybe.
Right.
Rolled them in the bread, and, you know, I can only eat this quail one leg.
But they did.
You know, I can imagine myself complaining. I'm sure I would have complained. I complain now a lot. But let's see what happens here in 20. Verses 1 and 2, God now gives them some of the people instructions. Chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. Someone want to grab that one?
And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage.
So God doesn't just start with, you do this. He reminds them of what he's done, right? Now listen, I brought you out, you as a people out of the land of Egypt, and I brought you out of that bondage, and I'm giving you, rescued you, I've saved you, I've done the whole thing. He reminds them, right? We're not going to read about the Ten Commandments here until the next lesson, but we want to remember that this is the basis or the foundation of God's law. That he wanted his people. That's why they followed the Passover. That's why they continue to do that to this day as a reminder of how God freed them from the Egyptians. In this agreement that God's making them, he wants this agreement to help remind them that they are helpless. Now, you may think, well, why in the world would God do this? Okay, we're not going to get to this, like I said, but want to think about this. The law always demands perfect obedience. Think about that today with some of the laws that we have in this land. And is that an accurate statement? So we have this thing called a speed limit. Anybody here ever speed?
Always,
right? The law says when you're riding down Route 8, it is 50 miles an hour. That law that's in place demands perfect obedience to it. Go ahead, what are you going to say?
Wait, you're comparing the law of commandments of God opposed to the laws of man.
Okay. Well, I'm using it as an example.
Right.
So, are they? Would that be the same? Because I find myself, I know the state trooper. You don't feel guilty about it. Why don't you feel guilty when you go over the speed limit?
Because it's socially acceptable.
Okay. I agree with that. Go ahead.
Sometimes, if you do the speed limit.
Mm-hmm.
You're endangering people around you.
Okay, sure.
It's safe. It's like we have control. It's okay.
It's okay. We have control. Right. So here's, now think about God's law. We're not going to really talk about all these tonight, but think about God's law. And God's law says, well, we'll use one here. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That's one of the laws that he gives to the children of Israel. And he says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Okay, so in the children of Israel's eyes, oh, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. What am I going to do? What would you do? You're on the mountain here and God gives that law.
Write it down.
What do you think you would want to do to make it holy, to keep it holy? Because God's saying the Sabbath day is holy.
It's his day,
right? Okay.
Rest?
Yeah. Okay, so when we get into this next lesson next week, I want you to be thinking about some of these laws, because God is saying that it demands perfect obedience. So, and we know that we can't keep that. We can't be perfect. We're already born unperfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how in the world can we attain to this law? The children of Israel, when they get this law, they've already agreed that they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Remember? They haven't even heard the law yet, and they're already agreeing to be obedient to this law. They haven't heard all these things yet, but they've already agreed to it. Just be thinking about it. Let me give you a story. A man swimming across the river, and he becomes so exhausted in the swift current that he was unable to reach the other side, and so he begins to drown. Many people were on the banks and they stood there watching. However, most of them were not strong swimmers, so they dared not try to rescue the drowning man. Only one of the men among them was known to be a competent swimmer. The crowd kept urging this particular man to help the drowning man, but to their disappointment, he just stood there, watching as the man struggling became weaker and weaker and weaker. Finally, when it became evident that the man in the river had given up, the strong swimmer dived in and rescued him. After, when the people criticized him for having waited so long, he responded, "I was unable to help him as long as he kept struggling. He couldn't be rescued until he gave up trying to save himself." That is a very accurate story. You know, that's one of the things they teach you when you do lifeguarding.
That's right, because you'll go down with him.
Exactly. You will go down. Now, you try to tell the swimmer to stay still and let me save you, rescue. That goes against our
right.
Everything within us. God is doing the same thing with the children of Israel, with the law, when we get to it. You and I would take the law. If the deliverer had never come, you and I would always struggle, and we will fight, and we will try, we will do everything we can to keep that perfect obedience to the law. We still struggle with this today. There is a war within us that wants to do things our way, to try to bridge that gap, that chasm on that picture to God. And so God is, he laid out the law to show the children of Israel that you cannot do this. And we'll see that as we continue to move forward. But
didn't they have kind of laws anyway? I mean, you know, honor your parents and you know, you shouldn't steal and stuff like that. Wouldn't they have that already in place within their society at the time?
It didn't have that, yeah. They would have had the moral law that every man is born with,
right,
from God, that God had stamped.
Mostly eye for an eye, basically.
Right. So you killed somebody. So we didn't really cover that story, but one of Judah's, was it Judah's or Reuben's sisters, was raped. And so the brothers, they said, "Oh, you raped our sister, so we're going to go kill you." So they went in and wiped out all the town.
Wow.
And so it's at that point, that's what you did. So if you shed someone's blood, your life is going to be taken too. But God hadn't given the law yet. He hadn't laid out all these do's and don'ts. And we won't cover them all, but there's over 600 laws that that the Israelites were given. And so we won't cover all 600. We're going to cover some of them. But let me read to you Romans 3, 19 through 20. And let's see what the law, what it says about the law. A little bit here. And this is a description of what the law does. Okay? 19 and 20 of Romans 3 says this. Obviously, the law applies to those to whom it was given. For its purpose is to keep people from having excuses and to show the entire world is guilty before God. For no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are. That's what the law does. So, going back to the illustration of speeding, when a police officer pulls you over for speeding, whether it's 5 miles, whether it's 10 miles, whether it's 15, and whether it's 50, if you're doing 100 in the 50-mile-an-hour zone, whatever, and you get pulled over, the police officer can do one or two things, right? He can write you a warning, say, okay, you know, take it easy, young man, slow down. He can give you a ticket. Mm-hmm. He could take you to court. He could arrest you if you're going 100 miles an hour, take your license away, the judge would then suspend you. Or he could throw the law up in your face, right, and say, did you know the speed limit was 55 miles an hour?
That's usually the first thing.
That's what they say, right? Mm-hmm. Don't they throw the law up in your face? Right. Do you know what the speed limit was that you just ran through?
That's correct.
They do that. What are they doing? Why are they asking you that?
Because you're going to say, yeah, 55, and that's you acknowledging that you knew.
Ah. They want to, they're doing the same thing that God does, even though they probably don't think about it that way. That's what God was doing. The mirror of saying, hey, in the law. And oftentimes, what do we do then? Well, I didn't know it was 55. I thought it was 65, officer. I'm so sorry. Right? I'm so sorry about that. And then he gauges, or she, depending on how good of a, I'm going to say bribing, not bribing them, how good you sweet talk them into letting you off the hook or, you know, whatever.
Crying.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Never had a ticket before, officer. You know, whatever, but they throw the law in your face, in the mirror. They want you to see, oh, yeah, okay. Now do that. The commandments of God are like an X-ray machine. Think about the commandments of God as an X-ray machine on your life, on my life. They really show us who we are inside. They really show us deep within inside. Samuel says this, the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. So God is taking the law, and he is wanting to expose what is deep down inside our hearts. And in Jeremiah it says, for the heart of man is deceitfully wicked above all that we can ask or think. In other words, God doesn't care about the outside of us, how we act on the outside. All he's worried about is our heart. And the law is that mirror. It exposes, or is an X-ray machine that exposes us to what we truly are inside. And so then we get this. The same principle with the illustration of the thing. That sin can be outweighed with good deeds. Well, you know, I know the police officer won't pull me over if I'm doing 70 in a 65 because they allow me to have 5 miles in here. And if you know a police officer, if you stay out of the left lane because they drive down the left lane and they go 80 miles an hour, so I can get away with 70 and I should be fine.
Or cut him behind him and follow.
Oh, we're cutting behind him and follow. I'm always behind him, so I'm doing slower than he is. You know, I think of those things. I take my kids up every Monday morning up to Newark, and I get on Route 1, and, man, they're doing 85, 90 miles an hour, and I'm pushing them in at 65, and I'm like, okay, set the thing at 65, and I'm just sitting there, and the right lane is 65, and they're flying by me. I think I can do 70, no problem at all, and I won't get in trouble. Maybe 75, 72, I'll go ahead and do that, right? So we think a lot of times to try to justify doing something that we know deep down inside is probably not right. And yes, you can play the other flip side to it, that they don't want you, you know, doing 45 miles in a 65-mile-an-hour zone,
right,
because you are now a hazard instead of that. So there are things that we can do, but man says this. This is what man does. This is what we do apart from the deliverer, okay, and apart from God. This is what God says. Even one sin outweighs an entire lifetime of good deeds. One sin. Now think about that at a moment, and what would be that one sin? Now you don't have to answer that. I just want you to think about that. One sin will outweigh an entire lifetime. So when we stand before God, as we've learned that we're going to all do, we can't say, well, God, I've done all these good things, and I only got one sin. That's all I've ever done is one sin. In the New Testament, there is a parable. There's a story told of a man who comes to ask the deliverer, I won't say the deliverer's name, but asks the deliverer a question. What must I do to inherit eternal life? Right? You remember that parable, that story? And the deliverer responds and says, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and all thy strength. Love thy neighbor as thyself, right? I have done all those. I've kept the law, I've kept the commandments, I've done everything, and God gives him that one thing. And then the guy, then the deliverer says, well, go sell all that thou hast and give to the poor, and follow me. And he gets, what in the world? I can't do it, because he had great wealth. And he went away sad. He was looking for things to do, not necessarily about his heart. So he was trying to do things to make himself right in God's eyes. And God says that's it. James 2:10 says this. For the person who keeps all the laws except one is as guilty as the person who has broken all of God's laws. Now, how does that make you feel? Sometimes this brings up a lot of problems in class, because in our society, we have these different laws that give you different punishments for different things. So, if I speed one time and I get a ticket, and then I speed again, I might get another ticket.
It gets worse
and worse. And it gets worse and worse, right? But the worst thing I'm going to do is lose my driver's license, or if I become a habitual offender, then I'll go to prison for life. You know, they say three strikes and you're out type thing. Mm-hmm. However, speeding is not that bad, right? Compared to somebody who goes and kills somebody. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. If I go kill somebody, I'm going to be looked on different than the person who speeds, correct? In the judge's eye. God is saying he doesn't care. The person who kills somebody is just as guilty as the guy who speeds. Wait a minute. Those aren't equal. They're not equal crimes. God, in God's eyes, he doesn't care, because each is a sin. You see that picture there? And for us, I'm like, wait a minute. Sure, the guy who sinned and killed somebody, he needs to go to prison for life or have his life taken, depending on where the judge rules, depending on where law you're in. But for the person who speeds, really, just give him a fine, give him some points on his insurance, whatever. Not a big deal. Everybody else does it. All right? When we come at it from God's point of view, our self-improvement, our righteous acts, good works, or the Ten Commandments, or the law, can never make us reach or bridge that gap to God. And that's what God wants us to see. He wants to see it, that no one can keep God's commandments perfectly. Why? Because we are not perfect, right? We are born sinners. We are completely as if we have this hidden nature within us that we can't see.
So Gabriel's not going to come down and say, that wasn't that bad, I'll give you a pass.
Exactly. He's not. He can't. Peter can't stand at the pearly gates and say, well, Matt, you know back there in 1983 you did this. And that's not as bad. And you've done 15 good things prior, you know, after that. That erases that bad thing.
I'll cover for you.
I'll cover for you. No, he can't do that. Romans 3, 10 through 12 says this. As the scriptures say, no one is righteous, not even one. No one is truly wise, and no one is seeking God. All have turned away, and all have become useless. No one does good, not a single one. Their talk is foul, like stench from an open grave. Their tongues are filled with lies. Snake venom drips from their lips. Their mouths are full of cursings and bitterness. They rush to commit murder. Destruction and misery are always following them. They do not know where to find peace. They have no fear of God at all. Obviously, the law applies to those whom it was given. We read this just a little bit ago. For its purpose is to keep people from having excuses and to show the entire world as guilty before God. For no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands. The law simply shows us how sinful we are, or as the x-ray to our heart. That is the purpose of the law. And yet the law for the children of Israel demanded perfect obedience. So the law demanded perfect obedience, and yet its purpose is to expose the inner heart and their inner desires. Can you say that God is a gracious and merciful God, that he would provide something for mankind to have a way to see their need for something else, which we can't really talk about at this point?